Thank you very much, Chair Imason, and thank you to everyone for that great presentation. So much good work going on. It's really good to hear about that. Okay, well, as we proceed, we need to move on to our next agenda topic, which we know is going to be just as engaging as the previous one. And we will turn it over to staff to talk about the water quality coordinated work that is currently going on. And since we are short on time and we want to respect everybody's time, I'm going to ask folks to make a note of questions, unless it's a really quick, you know, yes or no kind of clarification, and we'll hold those to the end. And we'll also ask staff to, share what you need to share, but, also feel free to move along if you think the point has been made, because I think we're going to want to have time for a little bit of discussion here. This is a really rich topic. There's a tremendous amount of really important work going on. And so with that, I will turn it over to the presenters. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Imason, Chair George. Thanks for the introduction on this topic, and members of the Board of Forestry and EQC. And thanks to State Forester Doherty and Director Whitman for your attention this morning. Before we get started too much, I'd like to also note that Matt DeVore and Diane Lloyd, both our respective counsels, legal counsels for ODF and DEQ, are also slated to have some discussion today. And I'd also like to introduce Jamie Damon, who will be helping to facilitate some of that discussion later in the topic. So we'll be presenting an overview of the shared responsibility, review of the Department of Justice memorandum, outline of the MOU draft framework, and discussions amongst board and commission with the facilitator. So we have reserved a fair amount of time for this topic, knowing that that rich discussion will ensue. I'd also like to note that, acknowledge that some of this information may be a little bit redundant for some, but it's important for setting the foundation for others, particularly those folks that are new to this topic. So Oregon's public policy for forest practice regulation is to encourage economically efficient forest practices that ensure the continuous growing and harvesting of forestry species and the maintenance of forest land for such purposes as leading use on privately owned land consistent with sound management, soil, air, water, fish and wildlife resources. You've heard this before, and I think you'll probably get some more perspective around this from DOJ, but I'd also like to note a couple items about Oregon's policy and regulatory framework for protecting water quality in non-federal forest land relies on two main regulatory approaches augmented by voluntary measures and incentives. So Oregon's strong land use laws maintain forest land and forest use, provide water quality protection by avoiding negative impacts to natural resources from development. And this is also reiterated in statewide planning goal 4 for forest lands. The Forest Practices Act works in concert with these land use laws. And in addition, the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds provides a framework for additional voluntary approaches to improve water quality outcomes on forest land. This three-tiered approach results in forest land having the highest water quality in Oregon. And the board's regulations also require effectiveness monitoring to ensure rules and best management practices are adequate to protect resources. The board oversees the Forest Practices Act effectiveness monitoring program to ensure data collection that informs the board's adaptive management approach of establishing these practices, monitoring effectiveness, and updating rules based on science. The Forest Practices Act rules specifically require monitoring in the areas of water quality, streamside forests, pesticide use, which State Forester Doherty commented on earlier, and landslides and public safety. And the Department of Forestry's monitoring strategy, which the board approved, prioritizes key questions based on public input to promote efficiency in designing and implementing projects to assess the effectiveness of forest practices into the future. I'm going to quickly transition the rest of this to Jennifer Weigel with DEQ.
Hi, good morning, Chair George and Chair Imason. For the record, my name is Jennifer Weigel, and I'm the Interim Deputy Director here at DEQ. So as noted by Kyle, we're kind of tag teaming some of the background before we turn it over to Matt and Diane to talk through the DOJ advice memo. So just by way of a bit more background in terms of DEQ and EQC's responsibilities as it relates to water quality, I think as this group well knows, both between the commission and DEQ, we are charged with protecting water quality in Oregon and administering the Federal Clean Water Act for our state. So in short, what this means is establishing water quality standards to protect beneficial uses, issuing permits and certifications that limit water pollution, and in areas where water quality standards are not met, overseeing the development and implementation of plans to further limit pollution from all contributing sources in order to achieve water quality standards over time. While in Oregon, through DEQ and EQC, while in Oregon, those entities have the primary responsibility and authority under the Federal Clean Water Act and state law to adopt and implement policies regarding water quality protections for Oregon's waters. I also just want to acknowledge the role that federal agencies have in that process. The EPA plays an oversight role in the Oregon's administration of the Clean Water Act. And this role requires EPA for certain key program actions, such as the adoption or revision of water quality standards and adoption of total maximum daily loads. Those have to be approved by EPA as being consistent with federal statute and regulation. Where there's an instance where EPA finds that Oregon's actions have not been consistent with federal rule and statute, it must disapprove those, and absent corrective action by the state obligates EPA to overpromulgate those requirements for the state. In addition, where DEQ establishes standards that may affect threatened or endangered species, EPA must consult with either or both as appropriate, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and NOAA Fisheries under the Endangered Species Act to assure that those standards are protective of threatened and endangered species. So these key elements, adopting in-stream water quality goals in the form of water quality standards and developing and implementing TMDLs as the plan to achieve those standards where they are not being achieved, those are foundational aspects of how DEQ carries out its water quality protection responsibilities. Similarly, these programs are the underpinnings for how DEQ interacts with various entities that are within a watershed. So everyone from local jurisdictions, businesses, other federal agencies, and state agencies, which includes working with these entities on their development of their TMDL implementation plans and on their efforts that contribute to meeting water quality standards over time. And a little bit more background in terms of how DEQ's Clean Water Act work has evolved over time, which I think is important context for this conversation. In the early days of Clean Water Act implementation, 70s and going into the 80s and even the 90s, the state's focus was really on controlling wastewater from cities and industry. And since really around the mid 90s into current day, that focus has shifted to be more explicit and holistic in our efforts to address pollution more broadly. And more specifically, starting in the late 1990s and the early 2000s, there was a greater emphasis nationally in ensuring that states are developing and implementing plans or total maximum daily loads for states are not, for waters that are not meeting water quality standards. As a result, over the last 10 years, there's been even greater emphasis by EPA and subsequently by states on the Clean Water Act requirement for states to demonstrate and assure that actions will occur that ultimately implement TMDLs and ultimately meet water quality standards. You know, that is bringing to the forefront, you know, a lot of challenges in terms of addressing contemporary pollutant issues that are often really challenging and complex to address and involve often many different types of sources and different types of land ownership and activities that are contributing to pollution and require, as a result, much more complex. Sorry, if I don't move in this office, my lights go out. hold on.
Okay. We still see you well, Jen.
So anyway, so As the Department of Justice, as our counsel will be talking about in more details, they go through the advice memo, they'll be addressing a little bit more how this interplays in our current work and the efforts that DEQ is working on and the need to marry up these requirements and processes with the work that we do and collaborating with ODF. So with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Kyle to continue with some additional background.
Great. Thank you, Kyle. And just one note as we move into your next comments. Chair Imason, the three of you who are in the room there, it's quite hard for us to see you. So if somebody has a quick question, go ahead and help us out by letting us know that somebody in the room has desire to ask a question. Thank you. To you, Kyle.
Thank you. I made a faux pas earlier and did not introduce myself. So for the record, my name is Kyle Abraham. I serve as the Private Forest Division Chief. So as Jennifer noted, sort of the drivers for ODF with respect to water quality and streamside monitoring, ODF and DEQ have worked very closely on and collaborated on the monitoring and the completion of the riparian rule analysis and subsequent rulemaking, referring, of course, to the additional riparian protections on small and medium salmon, steelhead, and bull trout streams. And as the board knows, we've also worked closely on the streamside protection review with DEQ and ODFNW. And as part of that process, the board directed the department to formulate a range of approaches to study sufficiency of rules, including additional work with DEQ and further evaluation of total maximum daily loads. The department has provided comments during development of total maximum daily loads in the past and expect that ODF and the board will further engage in that process as new total maximum daily loads near completion. And as noted in the director comments, both agencies strive for the same outcome, which is high water quality from Oregon's forest land.
And so to pick up on that, where we sit today, DEQ is in a place where it does routinely evaluate water quality standards for attainment and is now routinely developing total maximum daily loads for a range of pollutants to achieve standards where they are not being met. And in order to do that, DEQ spends a lot of time with various businesses, landowners, local governments, federal agencies, and state agencies talking about water quality evaluations and analysis, and also talking about how best to implement actions that can collectively reduce pollution to address those water quality impairments. These interactions and collaborations that we have, we view as being essential. DEQ is not expert in all the various types of activities that occur on Oregon's landscape, and we rely on these interactions to conduct our analyses better and to ensure that plans for implementation are reflective of actions that can be taken by particular sectors. As we sit here today, the key areas of work that DEQ has in front of it include addressing a large number of total maximum daily loads for temperature, which cover a large portion of the state and are due to be developed on a court-ordered schedule, and also working on other TMDL work that the agency has identified as high priority, including completing work on several total maximum daily loads in the Mid-Coast region, addressing several different pollutants. Most of the total maximum daily loads that DEQ has undertaken to date has focused on achieving water quality conditions such as temperature and dissolved oxygen that are also just critical for achieving the environmental outcomes that we have, and in particular, a critical element for recovery of salmonid species. From where we sit, we view the interactions that we've been having and the collaboration that we've been undertaking with ODF as really important. And working toward an outcome that gives both agencies better clarity about how we will be interacting in these processes that we each have, so that DEQ at the end of the day is incorporating ODF's expertise, and that the agencies have a common pathway to working toward identifying implementation actions where they're needed. And so that, recognizing that as a backdrop, back in late 2019, actually a little bit earlier than that, but in terms of kind of formalizing and putting some scope to the agency's collaboration effort, toward the end of summer of 2019, The agencies, including Director Whitman and State Forester Doherty, and the chairs of our respective board and commission and liaisons, gathered and identified that an explicit need to do this collaboration effort, and also identified goals for this work together, which were by their very nature high level, but also kind of set the agencies in a particular direction toward achieving some goals that we identified that we shared. So one, foundationally making sure that the agencies have an understanding of their respective policy and legal frameworks, working to agree mutually acceptable processes between the two agencies related to assessing adequacy of force practices, act rules, and other measures in particular basins or sub-basins where water quality standards are not being met and where a TMDL has been adopted or is being developed. Developing load allocations for forest lands and other conditions necessary to achieve standards within basins, and ODF and DEQ, along with their respective governing bodies, committed to embarking on an interagency policy review, and that a commitment to each agency articulating current understanding of roles and responsibilities and how we'll approach the collaborative work. And finally, acknowledging that we have a collective desire to achieve and maintain high quality water on all forest lands, and to ensure that we are operating in a way that fosters open dialogue and open discussion about how to approach this. As part of this work, we identified as a key outcome that we would develop a memorandum of agreement at the end of this, as a product of this process, that would describe our agency agreement and commitment to processes for water quality coordination on non-federal forest land. So as we've been embarking on this work since that time, and as we initiated this work, we identified, and it became clear to us, that the agencies would benefit from legal advice from the Department of Justice on key aspects. So as a result, the agencies sought advice from the Department of Justice on the respective authorities and obligations of the Environmental Quality Commission and the Board of Forestry for the protection of water quality on forest land. So in a moment, I'm going to turn it over to Diane Lloyd and Matt DeVore to talk through that advice. And then following their overview of that, Kyle and I are going to talk a little bit about how we are working toward development of that memorandum of understanding and the framework that we've put together so far that will help guide that product from this collaboration effort. So with that, I will turn it over to Diane and Matt.
Great. Thank you, Jennifer. And thank you, members of the board, members of the commission, Director Whitman, State Forester Doherty. My name is Diane Lloyd. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Oregon Department of Justice. And part of my role at DOJ is advising DEQ's water quality program. I'm here this morning with my colleague, Matt DeVore, who's counsel for ODF and the board. And we are going to discuss advice, as Jennifer described, that was requested by the agencies, analyzing the respective agency authority to protect water quality on forest lands. That advice was circulated yesterday. It is available on both the board and commission's websites. Next slide. So the topics we'll discuss this morning, Jennifer covered a lot of the background as well as Kyle. We're going to discuss the EQC's authority to implement the Clean Water Act, that includes development of water quality standards, and then TMDLs in instances where water quality standards are not met. We'll spend some time discussing allocations, particularly allocations done through surrogate measures. And then we'll also discuss, as Jennifer described to some extent, the reasonable assurance framework and standard for approval and implementation of TMDLs. And Matt, do you want to proceed with the board section?
Yes, thank you, Diane. Good morning. I'm Matt DeVore, contact counsel for the Department of Forestry's Private Forest Division. Thank you for the opportunity to participate in this joint session. with a discussion on protecting water quality in Oregon's forest lands. So the overview we have here for the Board of Forestry Authority, what we plan to do is discuss the legislative direction that authorized the Board of Forestry to supervise all matters of forest policy and management. The board accomplishes this by establishing forest practices, which protect a variety of interests, including the maintenance of water resources in general, and then more specifically, the goal of ensuring that forest operations do not impair the achievement and maintenance of water quality standards. The obligation includes two elements. As Jennifer mentioned, the first is to maintain water quality of water bodies that already meet the standards. And then the second component is to implement plans that improve water quality for water bodies that are not meeting those standards. The board and the commission and the agencies each have a particular role to play in the goal of protecting water quality in Oregon's forest lands. And the legislature directed that the agencies should work together and draw on each other's expertise in meeting that goal. With that, I'll hand the presentation back to Diane to go into more detail on the EQC's role.
Sure, thanks, Matt. Stephanie, next slide, please. So the commission has controlling authority for regulating water pollution in Oregon. The legislature has charged the commission with the obligation to adopt water quality standards and to take other steps necessary to implement the Clean Water Act. Water quality standards have three components listed on the slide. Those are designated uses for the water bodies, water quality criteria that are based on those uses, and an anti-degradation requirement that ensures that water bodies don't further degrade. As many of you are likely aware, one of the designated uses that frequently creates a limiting factor relevant to forestry operations is native cold water dependent aquatic species, such as salmon and trout. The Clean Water Act also requires that every 2 years DEQ assess water quality throughout the state and report to EPA on the condition of Oregon waters. This includes a list of the water bodies that are not currently meeting standards. That's the 303D list. And those are the water bodies that required the development of total maximum daily loads or TMDLs. Next slide. So if a water body fails to meet one or more water quality standards, DEQ is required to identify the amount of pollution coming from different sources and to determine where reductions are necessary in order for applicable standards to be met. And so on this slide is the most basic TMDL formula that includes the sum of waste load allocations, those are the allocations to point source discharges, plus the sum of load allocations, which are the allocations to non-point discharges, and a margin of safety. The TMDL also often will include a reserve capacity that allows for future growth and an allocation to background. But in sum, all of these inputs should result in movement towards meeting standards. Next slide. DEQ's TMDL development process is described in the EQC's Division 42 rules. That process includes development of a local advisory group to assist the department in development of the TMDL. That group acts similar to a rule advisory committee, but with a more technical bent. State law provides authority to establish and enforce TMDLs by either rule of the EQC or an agency order. Currently, the department is developing TMDLs through the process of agency order. Next slide. So as I described, the TMDL process includes the development of allocations to various sources. EQC rule and federal regulations provide that where a pollutant is highly variable or difficult to measure directly, that a TMDL may use surrogate measures as an additional means to express an allocation. One example that's important for non-point sources, such as forestry or ag, is the use of riparian shade as a surrogate measure for temperature in TMDLs. So for TMDLs in water bodies that do not meet water quality standards, DEQ can determine non-point source heat loads by analyzing current shade levels relative to the amount of shade likely to occur without operations impacting shade cover in riparian areas. As Jennifer mentioned, after a TMDL is developed by DEQ, it must be reviewed by EPA for consistency with federal requirements. In order to be approved by EPA, the TMDL must be accompanied by a management plan that provides reasonable assurance that when implemented, it will result in the attainment of water quality standards. Issuance of discharge permits to point sources that include waste load allocations provides reasonable assurance that those waste load allocations will be met. For non-point sources, EPA reviews the plan and considers whether practices capable of reducing specified non-point source load exist are technically feasible and at a level to meet allocations and have a high likelihood of implementation. Next slide, Stephanie. This slide provides the reasonable assurance framework. And so at a high level, DEQ determines pollutant reductions that are necessary in order to meet standards. And then the TMDL and Water Quality Management Plan identify designated management agencies or responsible persons that are in charge of sources of pollution. Those entities, the DMAs and RPs, develop plans to try to achieve reductions that get to the allocations in the TMDL. Those plans are submitted to DEQ for evaluation and review. And then DEQ monitors implementation of those actions through reporting and makes determination about future actions that may need to be taken if progress towards achieving the allocations is not accomplished. Next slide. So as I said, designated management agencies are required to submit plans describing their efforts to meet TMDL allocations. ODF is the DMA for non-federal forest lands. For non-federal forest lands, the commission has adopted a specific TMDL implementation rule. That rule provides that non-point sources discharges of pollutants from forest operations on state or private lands are subject to best management practices and other control measures established by ODF. However, in areas where a TMDL has been approved, site-specific rules under the FPA, Forest Practices Act, will need to be revised if DEQ determines that generally applicable FPA rules are not adequate to implement those TMDL allocations. If the board fails to act following such a determination by DEQ, then DEQ must request that the commission petition the board for rule changes. If the commission makes such a petition and the board fails to adopt changes, the commission or DEQ could adopt and enforce by rule or order source-specific requirements in order to comply with TMDL requirements. Some of you may recall that state water quality law includes a provision that neither the commission or DEQ may adopt or enforce any effluent limitation on non-point source discharges from forest operations unless they are required to do so by the Clean Water Act. TMDL load allocations are not effluent limits, as that term is defined in the Clean Water Act to apply to limits on point source discharges and limits in discharge permits. Additionally, as discussed prior, a TMDL is required by the Clean Water Act in instances where water quality standards are not met in a water body, and therefore the state law limitation on the adoption of effluent limitations cannot be interpreted as a prohibition on adopting load allocations in the context of TMDL development. And so with that, I'll turn it over to Matt to talk a bit about the board's authority, and then we'll cover the coordination of those respective authorities. Matt.
Thank you, Diane. If we could go to the next slide, please. So the first few slides here related to the Board of Forestry are the general statutory authority of the board. The Board of Forestry has the responsibility to supervise all matters of forest policy and management, also has exclusive authority to develop and enforce forest practice rules, setting standards for forest practices, and those standards must ensure the, the continuous growing and harvesting of forestry species and provide for the overall maintenance of several resources, including air quality, soil productivity, fish and wildlife, and water resources. Next slide, please. And so getting specifically into water resources, the legislature directed the board to establish best management practices as are necessary to ensure that, to the maximum extent practicable, non-point source discharges of pollutants resulting from forest operations on forest lands do not impair the achievement and maintenance of water quality standards established by the Commission for Waters of the State. Next slide, please. The legislature recognized that protection of water quality would require coordination of different state agencies and local governments. And in the statute cited here, the legislature specifically highlighted the need for the board to coordinate with the commission and gave the commission the opportunity to petition the board to require review of the forest practices established by the board, as Diane had mentioned. Next slide, please. In order to establish forest practices, there are certain findings and procedures that the board has to follow. Some of those requirements are set out by the legislature in statute, and the one cited here, 527.714, the legislature set out a series of findings that the board must make as it establishes forest practices. And those findings are discussed in more detail in our written memo. In addition to those statutory requirements, the board also established a process in its Division 635 rules that requires appointing an interdisciplinary task force that would make recommendations for rules in areas where forest practices are measurably limiting to water quality achievement. Next slide, please. So while the board must follow these procedures and make those listed findings, it must also be mindful of the obligation to coordinate with the commission. Forest operations must be conducted in compliance with the rules and standards of the commission. The benefit there is that operations that are conducted in compliance with the board's rules and the best management practices shall not be considered in violation of any water quality standards. And that statute's often referred to as a BMP shield for operators. And if we could advance to slide 14, and I'll hand the presentation back over to Diane.
Thanks, Matt. So as described, the board and commission, ODF and DEQ have interconnected roles in protecting water quality on forest lands. Broadly speaking, the Commission and DEQ assess waters and establish water quality standards, while the board and ODF then establish forest practices to comply with and work towards compliance with those standards. The legislature intended for the two agencies to work collaboratively on their efforts so that each agency brings in its perspective and expertise to create coordinated effort with the goal of protecting water quality and complying with the Clean Water Act. As described, when the commission establishes water quality standards based on EPA regulations and guidance, as well as DEQ's research and analysis, the board and ODF may assist in the commission's decisions and also participate in water quality standards revisions through rulemaking. The board also may request that the commission review any water quality standard that specifically affects forest operations on forest land. If a water body is meeting the commission's water quality standards, then as Matt has said, it's the board's obligation to ensure that forest practices do not impair maintenance of those standards. But if a water body is not meeting standards, then DEQ will establish a TMDL for that water body and determine whether current board rules and any other measures proposed by ODF for implementation are adequate to achieve the pollution reductions required by the TMDL. The board and ODF can and should participate actively in the development of any TMDL for a water body involving state and private forest lands. This can include data sharing and information prior to and during TMDL development, and also participation in and providing input during the local advisory group process. And that's the TMDL development group that's provided for in the EQC rules. Once a TMDL is adopted and approved by EPA, any load allocations for non-federal forest lands and operations included in the TMDL will be binding. So the reductions required described in the TMDL are the goal that we all need to work towards achieving. The board's obligated to implement rules that establish forest practices, which may include voluntary actions as well as regulatory changes consistent with the TMDL. If DEQ then determines that existing board rules or any other measures proposed to reduce pollution from these forestry activities are inadequate, DEQ will initiate the petition process that's described in the EQC rule, but also ORS 527-765 by asking the commission to petition the board to revise its rules to protect water quality on forest lands. This process could lead to the loss of the BMP shield that Matt mentioned for forest operations if the board fails to revise those rules within that required period of time. Matt?
Thanks, Diane. In the interest of time, I think we've pretty well covered it. The last part of this that I wanted to just to emphasize is that even though the board and the commission have slightly different roles and slightly different procedures, DEQ and the commission, they're the entity, the agency that determines the load allocations for the forest lands. And that determination is what serves as a target for the Board of Forestry to follow. And then the Board of Forestry has the authority to determine how best to regulate forest practices in a manner that achieves that target. So it is a slightly different focus, and each entity is going to have a different role to play, but they're all working towards that common goal, utilizing the expertise of each agency. In determining whether the forest rules are adequate, the Board, the Department of Forestry, the Commission, and the Department of Environmental Quality can also consider non-regulatory measures, so long as DEQ can establish that there's reasonable assurances that those measures, when implemented, will result in the attainment of the relevant water quality standard. And with that, I'll hand the presentation back to Diane to provide some updates on DEQ's ongoing work related to temperature TMDLs.
Thanks, Matt. Stephanie, next slide. This was mentioned, but Jennifer described that at a high level, the work that the agency would be doing on temperature TMDL replacement. But some of you may be aware of the ongoing litigation over the temperature standard and temperature TMDLs that were based on that standard. That substantive litigation regarding whether replacements required is complete. The temperature TMDLs remain in place while new TMDLs are developed, but DEQ and EPA are working together to develop temperature TMDLs through the process that is required by EQC rules. The schedule for that TMDL development was set by the Federal District Court order. Stephanie, if you proceed to the next slide, it describes, it shows the current schedule. And so these are the 14 temperature TMDLs that are being required to be replaced by the court. They will be worked through in groups of three at a time by the department, and will be issued over the next 8 years or so. So with that, I guess I will turn it back over to Jennifer and Kyle, and we are happy to field questions and participate further in the discussion. Thank you all again for having us today.
Thanks, Matt and Diane, for that. So I'm going to quickly move us through the MOU. You guys, there is a draft MOU framework, which was posted late yesterday, so apologies for that. We do have quite a bit of work to do yet on there. And so with the goal of collaboration between the agencies, DEQ and ODF working together to identify strategies, approaches, really thinking about how do we avoid elevation and duplication of sort of our processes where we can. And then thinking also about what are the principles of our interagency collaboration, which has been mentioned throughout this presentation. So seeking that clarity on agencies' process and outcome expectations, commitment to working toward achieving water quality outcomes, using the best available data, scientific information, and accepted scientific methods. Those will all be included in the MOU. Right now, the agencies, along with Kearns and West, have been working to flesh out more of those details. So what you see is a framework that represents probably where we were a little while ago, and we're putting lots of effort meeting monthly to really kind of flesh that out so that it has some meat on there. And then there will be sections that talk about desired future conditions. That's a very important aspect for both DEQ and ODF, adaptive management, and the consideration of the basin-specific rules. So with that, I guess I'll kind of just turn over to Jamie to help determine if there's any questions or facilitate ongoing discussion. I think we've got a little bit of time left.
Great. Thank you, Kyle. And thank you, board members and commissioners. My name is Jamie Damon. I'm a mediator with Kearns and West, and I've been supporting the agencies through the development of the collaborative MOU. So we have a couple of questions for all of you, but before we ask our questions, I wanted to open it up and see what questions you have for staff. Are there any questions?
Yeah.
I believe Joe Justice has a question.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm having a little trouble with my feed here. It's out in northeastern Oregon, so I don't know if I'm being heard or what. But I do have a question, and this is probably for maybe Jennifer or Director Whitman. The work that's taking place in the Private Forest Accord, which is, I hope all of you know, is a negotiation organized by the governor's office between the conservation community and the forestry community, hoping to, you know, attempt to look at, you know, science-based information related to ultimately potentially coming up with an HCP on private lands. If successful, this HCP would, you know, address issues related to protecting species, fish species, and I assume would also address water quality concerns related to TMDLs. I guess my question is, how do you see this work aligning with the EQ's Clean Water Act? I don't know, Jennifer or Richard.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
Okay, I'll start, and then Richard can add. Member Justice, thanks for the question. So the accord table is focused on developing a habitat conservation plan. Whether or not water quality considerations are explicit in that process, that's not the main goal, but it's unclear at this point whether or not that will be explicitly addressed. But what I do want to point out is that particularly when it comes to water quality conditions that are important for the species that such as salmon, you know, our water quality standards are intended to protect cold water communities, most importantly, salmon species. So we would anticipate a significant relationship, assuming that process is successful, with strategies that are needed to protect cold water species such as salmon that are part of, clearly would be part of that scope and objective, having an important role, if not considerable overlap, in what we would identify under Clean Water Act processes as needed protection. So there's obviously lots of important and fine details in all of that and a lot of process in front of us, but we view that accord process as we're all in virtual rooms. So we're virtually sitting at the periphery of that, engaging when asked to, but we are actively participating as appropriate for our state agency role in that process and tracking what those discussions are.
I appreciate that, Jennifer. I do. Really, really important work, and I'm very optimistic as a board member that we'll be successful. So thank you for that. Mm-hmm.
Other questions? Okay, how about we ask our questions then? So one of the questions we have for all of you to consider is, as the agencies have been approaching this collaborative work and the development of the MOU, what additional or different important elements do you think the agencies should consider and or incorporate into the collaboration?
This is, for the record, this is Brenda McComb, Board of Forestry member. One thing that I didn't hear discussed this morning was climate change and how that will be considered by both the Board of Forestry and DEQ in collaboration.
Jennifer or Kyle, either of you want to take a run at addressing how we would incorporate that, or do we just want to make a note that that's something we need to address?
Member McComb and Jamie, I suspect both. We probably want to make a note of that. And some of the ways in which DEQ approaches development of total maximum daily loads, we do incorporate broadly what is known about current conditions, what we might anticipate in the future. And, you know, so we pull in various data sets that may help us to some degree look outward at climate change. I think there are other parts of work that are also ongoing within the state that may also be looking at different attributes. So I think it's important for us to bring that to our process, talk through a little bit more about what is and what can and can't be addressed through the water quality interactions and collaborations that we're having, so we can be more clear about that. But there is some opportunity to bring that in and be more explicit about how it can be as well.
Richard?
Yeah, if I could supplement that just a little bit. It's a great question. Thank you, Member McComb. Let me just add a little bit. Both EPA and DEQ's approach on TMDLs and TMDL implementation, there, you know, when we're working in a watershed or a subbasin that is not currently meeting water quality standards, and the reason that water quality standards are not being met has to do with things like vegetation or climate. Those are things that change over long periods of time. And so we do take into account the changes over time, both in assessing what the trajectory looks like to bring that waterway back into compliance with a water quality standard. So whether we're talking about temperature or sediment or other pollutants, we do take time series into account. And part of that also means looking at both what are positive changes that can occur over time and also what are negative changes that could occur over time.
Yeah, thank you both for those reactions. Just a quick comment. The stream temperature modeling being done by Norwest have identified some stream reaches which might be particularly vulnerable to climate change over the not so long future, probably sooner than some of the stream reaches. I'm just wondering if modeling is a component of, like the Norwest modeling, a component of how you're establishing your TMDL loads.
Member McComb, yes, modeling is a component of how we evaluate and do analyses at a watershed scale and pull in data and information. Our folks are also very plugged into the folks at U.S. Forest Service who are doing the Norwest modeling. So we're aware of that work. And so there's a lot of sharing of information that occurs between our folks and folks working on those models and doing temperature models, I think. So to the degree there's relevancy, there's good interaction and sharing of information about that kind of stuff.
Great, thank you.
Any other thoughts about additional different or important elements that we should be considering? We have a couple other questions, but I do want to do a time check with Chair George and Chair Imason, because I believe we're supposed to end this item at about 12:15.
Jamie, I do
yes,
see
that is our
Chair George and Vice Chair Barroso.
Chair George?
Yes. I appreciate, Jamie, you're checking in, though. Chair Imason, do you folks have a hard stop at 12:15?
No, we don't. We have our next meeting begins at 1 o'clock. Board members will want to get a bite to eat. That can be quick in between, so we don't have a hard stop until
okay. So we certainly want to be respectful of people's time. We don't want to take too much more time than we're scheduled for, but at least we know we have a little bit of flexibility. I'll maybe make a quick response to your question and then I'll let you go to Vice Chair Barroso. So you were talking about, you know, additional considerations. I think this is kind of inherent in some of the conversations made by staff earlier, but I want to just highlight the opportunity here, I think, through the work that's been done in the MOU to align and consolidate work efforts, right? So to avoid redundant or sequential work processes whenever possible. So to maximize engagement in processes that can cover obligations of both agencies. So to engage actively in the TMDL process, to maximally cover the requirements for analysis of the Board of Forestry, with the understanding that there are some distinct responsibilities on each side as well. So we understand that they don't completely overlap, but wherever possible, align and combine those processes. Because there's tremendous resource investment for both departments in something like a TMDL process, you know, or an adequacy analysis. And so what we want to do for the behalf of the state, the resource, and all the staff involved is make sure we're aligning that to the maximum extent. And to some degree, that also will have to do with aligning our language or deciding where our language does or doesn't come together and our goals. So, you know, desired future conditions. Do we or do we not agree that a desired future condition is water quality standard compliance? You know, where can we be clear about where our goals can align? And I just want to encourage us to do that, you know, to the degree possible. And I think this hard work that's going on right now is going to take us a long way in that direction. So thank you.
Thank you for that. Vice Chair Barroso.
Thank you. I just want to thank both Diane as well as Matt for putting together the memo. I really appreciate the clarity that's come there. And in many ways for myself, just understanding more of the Board of Forestry's obligations. I echo a lot of what Chair George had said in terms of really working through and using this as a way to align our processes much more. But one thing I do want to see is as we do think about this MOU, and this is in part because I feel like I've been on the periphery of this conversation tracking for the past 4 years and before that, and now I appreciate this greater level of clarity that's coming forth. And so I would just love to see something around a sense of urgency within the document. What I see at the end of there is certainly a revisiting the document every 5 years. And it's hard to know whether that's actually appropriate based on what falls into the document, but I would really be looking at it and say whether 5 years least that's one place where I see a check-in with both agencies, both the commission and the board, to a check-in at a greater frequency. It's hard to know, again, based on the shape the document takes, whether 5 years is appropriate, but that's one place I saw that. But just something else, maybe another comment that really speaks to this urgency and this commitment to working together prudently and moving through this content, since we've been spinning around these issues for quite a while. So just want to thank everyone for the effort, but also note that that's something I would like to see noted in this MOU.
And Chair George, I've got a quick comment if this is an appropriate time. I can't raise my hand. I think that sense of urgency comes in part when you look at the schedule that was on one of the earlier slides with respect to the TMDL process. And, you know, I think that both boards have said that we want to do this in a collaborative manner. And there are many, many reasons for both boards to do that and to make that successful. I think the timeline we need that is sort of below that TMDL chart is when decisions become critical and the work that needs to be done to feed into those decisions. It seems to me that's really critical. We have had a good history, I think, with the work that we did with both the board and the commission with respect to the protecting cold water rule. Because EQC was setting the standard, we had the responsibility to come up with the framework that enabled us to meet that standard with best management practices. It's making that more live for these other issues, which are, you know, really daunting issues, I think, that we'll need to address, and how that comes back to this board in terms of decision making and timelines, I think, and the kind of involvement we need to have our board engaged in to be able to meet that schedule.
Richard, I see your hand up.
I say that as somebody who won't be here for it, except as an observer. But I think that's the sort of next daunting challenge.
Thank you, Chair Imason. And I would be remiss if I didn't take just a brief opportunity here to thank you for your work in bringing the Board of Forestry and the Environmental Quality Commission together on this effort. Also, you've been a force for that effort, and I personally appreciate it, and I think Oregonians appreciate all your work on the board, and we particularly appreciate your work around clean water. I too want to follow up on the Vice Chair Barrasso's comment about sense of urgency and reinforce the point that you just made, Chair Imason. We have 14 temperature plans that are going to be done in Oregon over the next 6 years, covering a fairly large portion of the state. We also have a series of temperature plans being done in the Mid-Coast area that will be very important for coho recovery in that part of the Oregon coast. And there is a great potential for disconnect here between the two agencies if we don't really seize this moment right now to bring our work together. In prior temperature plans that Oregon DEQ has done, we have looked at whether current forest practice rules provide the amount of shade that we believe is needed in order to meet water quality temperature standards in all areas. And I think that analysis, we've never made the determination that current forest practice rules are insufficient. But if you look carefully at that analysis, one could draw that implication from the analysis. we want to avoid getting into that space. We want to avoid getting into that space by working with the Department of Forestry so that as we do the analysis and we do the planning, we can create a record that shows that what we have in place will actually, over time, result in us achieving water quality standards, including the temperature standard. A lot of good work was done in the protecting cold water standard arena, the salmon steelhead bull trout rules that were adopted by the Board of Forestry. But those rules focused on the effects of individual forest operations and whether the particularly the temperature impacts of those operations would exceed a certain threshold. That's good work. It was important to get that set. But that is a different question than the one that we are faced with in watersheds where we're not currently meeting standards. And the question is, what do we need to improve conditions overall in order to meet those standards? Not how to avoid more than a threshold amount of impact per forest operation, but actually how to bring a watershed or portions of a watershed back into compliance. And that's the work that there is real urgency about getting our two agencies aligned on. And it's gonna be a big lift for both the EQ and the Department of Forestry to do that. I'll stop there.
Vice Chair Barrasso.
I appreciate that. And I wanna thank you both, Chair Imussen, as well as Director Whitman for that response. And it's in some ways, I don't wanna discount the fact that I seeing sort of this deadlines for approval on these TMDLs is aggressive, and I appreciate that. It's really the spirit in which we almost just work together to almost get to failure and work through those failures in how we work together. Not necessarily the spirit in which we're sort of developing that understanding or working towards these things, which will inherently take time. But I'm almost like go for failure as we work together and go for working and figure out those weak points and come back around and resolve those. So it's and maybe that just doesn't work within this context. But I want to just acknowledge my context. I can appreciate the aggressive schedule that is here. So, and I don't necessarily need a response to that, but I want to say that.
Thank you. I see Member McComb's hand is up again. Hello.
Thank you. For Director Whitman, I just want to make sure I understand what you just said, and it sounded to me like the DEQ and ODF need to begin to consider not the specific impacts of an individual forest operation, but the cumulative effects of forest operations and other land uses over watersheds as it contributes to either meeting or not water quality standards. Is that it?
That's, Chair George, Member McComb. That's correct. And this issue is not unique to forestry. We have the same issue on agricultural lands and other lands around the state. The forestry issues tend to be mainly in the coast where the predominant land use is forestry, or high-end watersheds where the predominant land use is forestry. So it's a little less complicated because of that, but it's essentially the same issue. It is a cumulative effects issue of multiple actions on the ground over time, impacting water temperature, particularly at different points in a watershed. And it gets quite complex because what we see is not necessarily that the temperature standard is not being met throughout a watershed, but it may only be certain portions of the watershed. And so, working with the Department of Forestry, looking at those realities on the ground and how to account for them and create a plan going forward that accounts for those finer grain details is the work that we need to do.
Great, thank you.
Chair George and Chair Emerson, I'm hesitant to introduce an additional question. We did have three questions, and we've actually been spending some time here talking about the second question, which is really how we can align our processes a little bit better. The third question has to do with non-regulatory methods, but I am cognizant of the time. What advice do you have for us about how much more time we should take?
Well, if I could just add to what I said before to Chair George, or maybe with getting a little logistical advice about what we need to do to prepare for our 1 o'clock meeting, we'll be in about 10 minutes, begin to have people who are signing on for that and need to test mics and all of that. So we won't have this infrastructure available after that time.
Yes, Jamie, I do think we should wrap it up, but the questions nonetheless are very important. And this might be a helpful time to share with everyone that comments from the public can be submitted in writing to the board and the commission and our staff. And those can be submitted to our assistant, Stephanie Caldera. And her email address is available on the agenda for today's meeting and on the DEQ website. And you know, any submission of written comments that people would like to share can be submitted until March 17th, Wednesday, March 17th. So I think we can just say that this is such a rich topic and there's so much to share that we've certainly used our time well. And I really want to thank Jamie, and everyone who is helping to facilitate this work moving forward. Thank you so much for your effort.
Thank you for the time today.
So thank you to all of our presenters and to the commission and the board. We know that this hard work to flesh out the details of the MOU, that they're still in the thick of that. We look forward to seeing that work as it moves forward from the outline. And we know that we're going to undertake that work with the desire to remove, you know, barriers to progress to the maximum extent that we can. And we're going to use this opportunity of focus and intention and a deliberate effort to align work to really take that as far as we can. Chair Imason, Director Whitman, Director Doherty, do we have anything else that we need to say before we conclude today?
I would just like, this is Director Doherty, I would just like to thank everybody for their engagement today and to thank all the presenters for their excellent work today. Thank you. And I think this, one last thing, I do think the collaborative relationships between our agencies and the board and the commission are critical to our success.
And I'd just like to add our board's thanks to you, Commissioner George, and to your Environmental Quality Commission members for joining us and allowing us to join with you for this session today. And to remind Board of Forestry members, come back to us at 11 or at 12:55 to be ready for our 1 o'clock meeting. Thank you.
Yes, Director Whitman.
Thank you, Chair George. I just thank everybody for the work that went into the presentation today. DOJ did a lot of work on the memo and really appreciate having that foundation. And again, thank you to Chair Imason for all his service and don't be a stranger.
Well, I too want to, before we close out, just want to thank Chair Imason so much for his leadership and for his engagement on this work. It is truly appreciated, and we know that we will have additional opportunities to work together and to talk to you and to enjoy your leadership on these important issues. So with that, I want to thank everybody who was a part of today's meeting, and we know we look forward to more work together. Thank you, everybody. Stay well. And Stephanie, I think that will conclude this portion of our meeting.
Thank you, Chair George. This is Stephanie Caldera, Assistant to the Environmental Quality Commission. The special joint meeting, including the Environmental Quality Commission, will now adjourn. As noted earlier, the Oregon Board of Forestry will continue their business meeting separate in the afternoon. Thank you all for joining us for this special joint meeting with the EQC today.